Right now we're working on our responsibilities to government. And last week and part of the week before, we took a look. And the ones in red are the responsibilities seen in the scriptures that we've already studied. We must submit to the law of the land, and we need to obey what God wants us to do. And you see the passages there. Anyone, and we looked at this last week, government, spouse, child, parent, friend, regardless of their motivation, who would have us to do something other than obey our God, is not our friend. And they're speaking for Satan. And we saw that with Uzzah, and we saw that also with Peter as he tries to talk Jesus out of laying down his life. And Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." We have to obey our God over everybody else, which goes along with principle 7 there as well. That's really principle 7. And then the third, if laws are in direct opposition to God's law, we must obey God, Acts chapter 5. And that's where we ended. We finished with Acts chapter 5 last week, and I don't think I got to put this up, but I want to kind of put this up. Because have you start thinking about it, I made reference of it, but a little bit stronger. Starting to think about the answer to the question, who decides for us if the laws of the land are in direct opposition to God's laws? I'm going to make some application. Hospitality. We'll make some application when we get to the end of this class on responsibilities to government. And as we make these applications, and we may start getting to that today, I think we probably will next week more so, this becomes an important question to answer. There's a lot of white and black in the scriptures. Fornication is sin. Drunkenness is sin. Lying is sin. But in connection with Romans 14, there's also some matters, areas, topics that we have to decide for ourselves. Understanding that we will stand before God on the day of judgment and give an account for that. And so over the past 2 years, and I have been referencing the past 2 years, and we will continue that, a lot of situations have come up, a lot of accusations have been thrown around on social media and everywhere else, and a lot of things have been said. And I'm not going to answer them. I'm going to ask questions and have each of us answer these questions in our own minds, in our own hearts. And so this is one of them. And the reason why I chose these three studies are responsibilities to elders, our responsibilities to government, and worship, because these have been the three studies I've studied this past 2 years, restudied the past 2 years. And I think they're very applicable as we come out of what we are coming out of. So, Acts chapter 16, we'll continue here, and as I said, we're going to take a look at some passages that deal with our relationship and help us to understand our responsibilities to government, and this is one that might be a surprise to us as to how Paul responds here. So let's take a look at it, and the next one as well, Acts 23. And when it was day, the magistrate sent to the officer, saying, "Let those men go." So the keeper of the prison reported these words to Paul, saying, "The magistrates have sent to let you go. Now therefore depart and go in peace." And Paul leaves. No, surprisingly. But Paul said to them, verse 37, "They have beaten us openly, uncondemned Romans, and have thrown us into prison. And now do they put us out secretly? No, indeed. Let them come themselves." Dina says, "When the babies start crying, I need to get quiet." So I'll get quiet here. "No, indeed. Let them come themselves and get us out." And the officers told these words to the magistrates, and they were afraid when they heard that they were Romans. Then they came and pleaded with them and brought them out and asked them to depart from the city. This is a surprise probably to many of us. Because Paul's dealing with whom? Who are the magistrates? What are they? They're government officials. And they said, "Go, get out of here." And Paul said, "Uh-uh, not going to do that." The government officials had done what by beating him and putting him in jail without a cause, without breaking a law? What had they done? They had broken Roman law. They had broken the law. And Paul says, "No, I want them to come and let us go." I'm not 100% sure of the lesson and responsibility here. But it is a passage about our relationship and interaction with the government. And so I believe we need to take a look at it and see what this teaches. Does this part of the passage speak to any lessons we can learn as to our expectations and desires for our government? They have beaten us openly, uncondemned Romans, and have thrown us into prison. And now do they put us out secretly? No, indeed. Let them come themselves and get us out. Probably a surprise, as I've already indicated. And also let me state here, I don't believe Paul's sinning. He wouldn't have done it. Wouldn't have said this. So what lesson or lessons about our responsibility? And as I said, I think this speaks more towards our relationship and expectations for our government more than it does our responsibilities. But maybe you came up with one. What do you think about this? Kevin? Then Jim?
That it's the Roman government who had at the time, a particularly advanced rule of government compared to other countries. So we could parallel that to the United States. We have laws and things which we can argue that if they're not done correctly, we have the right to argue that with the government or debate that or even sue. That's a whole different argument there. Whereas other countries in this world, This would not be what you would do.
Okay.
But Paul, being a Roman and understanding the Roman law, understood what they would do. Whereas other laws, say the Philistine people or whatever other group, this wouldn't have been what he would do.
So the point that we need to understand that just because it's not applicable to the government over here in Cuba or the government over in Venezuela, it's our government we're dealing with under which we are responsible.
So it changes culturally based
yes.
on where our
where we live and what government we're under. Very good. Jim?
I always looked at it that there were two reasons why I did this. Number one, for the sake of the church. He's the one that came to Philippi, established the church. Now, if he's discredited, his work is going to be discredited. The other is for himself because he has been beaten publicly. He has been disgraced publicly by the government. And so any work he tries to do after that, people are going to identify him with that public beating. So he needs to be exonerated for the sake of the church and for the sake of his work.
Okay. Anyone else? Mark? Thank you. Jacob?
Regardless of what he did here, by being offered his freedom, he did turn this into a personal conviction.
Yes, he did. Very good.
Yeah, going back to Brother Jim's comments, I think that's right. You know, because earlier in the chapter, he could have said before they beat him and Silas, hey, wait a minute, I'm a Roman citizen. I have rights that I'm going to make use of now. I don't know. Maybe he knew that there was an opportunity for him, you know, in the jail to preach the gospel with a jailer. I don't know about all that. But kind of going back to this question, which I think you get into, you know, Romans 13.
Yes.
That passage tells us why God established government. Mm-hmm. And gives us just the same reason why God established a family, why God established the church. There are guidelines, there are rules, there are boundaries. There's a certain work that he wants government to accomplish. Throughout history, I mean, lots of governments have overrun those rules and boundaries and disregarded them. But I'm thinking it also, I don't remember if you get into this, but 1 Peter 2, it says there in verse 18, well, it talks about submitting ourselves back in verse 13 to every human institution. But verse 18 says, servants, be submissive to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and gentle, but also to those who are unreasonable. And I think that principle applies, you know, to government, to our employers, slaves to masters, you know, the husband-wife relationship, as he continues on here. So we can see, you know, abuses of power and where people in government or in our work or in the family, even in the local church. I mean, the eldership could overstep their bounds, their authority. But there's still God's order of things. And I think, at least I see here in Acts 16, Paul is still being in submission to the government authorities, even though he is questioning why they did what they did and saying this is not right.
Indeed. And so, and continuing, kind of springboarding off of what everybody's been saying. I think we can have the expectation that the government does what with their own laws? That they obey them. I think we can have the expectations that our government obeys their laws. And we can even become frustrated when they don't. Okay? Now, we can even become frustrated when they don't obey them. Now, hold on. I'm not saying we can rebel against them. We're going to take a look at Acts 23 right now as soon as we're done here. And I kind of put these two passages together for a reason. But I want you to understand, you know, our expectations for our government can be the same thing as God's. And I think that's what we see here with Paul, is that the expectation was that they obey him. They obey their own laws. They obey their own rules. And as Jim's pointed out, and Jacob and others, and that, you know, that in so doing, them breaking the laws, that could have brought shame and reproach upon Paul and the church. So he's correcting it. But the point is, they need to have obeyed with their own laws. And they didn't do it. While Paul could have said he was a Roman citizen, it's interesting, every time he was beat, many times when he was beat, he never said he was a Roman citizen. Never claimed that. He went through with it. But here he does. And so, you know, I just kind of throw that out there for you. So, kind of add this responsibility to our government. We can have the expectation that our government will follow and obey their own laws just as we do. We can even be a little frustrated if they don't. Now turn over to Acts 23, and let's follow this up and finish that, because again, you take a look at passages and put them together. Okay, you take a look at passages and put them together to get the whole teaching on a matter. Then Paul, looking earnestly at the council, he's standing before the Sanhedrin at the council, said, "Men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God unto this day." And the high priest Ananias commanded those who stood by him to strike him on the mouth. Then Paul said to him, "God will strike you, you whitewashed wall, for you sit to judge me according to the law, and do you command me to be struck contrary to the law?" Notice what he accuses the high priest of. Doing what? What had they just done? What had he just done? He just broke the law, and he's upset. Paul's upset. He's frustrated. And those who stood by said, "Do you revile God's high priest?" Then Paul said, "I did not know, brethren, that he was the high priest, for it is written, 'You shall not speak evil of the ruler of of your people.'" Another surprising passage, I believe, but a slight variation that what we've seen. As I've already indicated, verse 3 indicates, Paul says, "Do you command me to be struck contrary to the law?" But Paul apologizes. And his whole attitude changes. Why? What's different with this situation as opposed to the previous situation? The magistrates were a ruler. What did Paul do to the government? Calls him a whitewashed wall, which is an insult. Disrespect for whom? The government. And Paul's attitude changes. Jim?
I was going to say, Jesus did much the same thing in Matthew chapter 23 when he called the scribes and the Pharisees whited sepulchers, all white walls. I think your point is very significant in the fact that the scribes and Pharisees may have been religious leaders, but this is the law.
Yes, and that's exactly what he's referencing here. This is the law. You've broken the law, you whitewashed wall. Now this, I'm going to tell you right now, over the past 2 years, I've not handled every situation perfectly, which is why I've restudied over the past 2 years. And I had a bad habit for many months of calling our governor the emperor with all of his mandates. And I didn't have a very good attitude towards him, I'll just be honest with you. And that was an insult. And when I reread this passage and restudied it, I thought about my referencing of that to the governor, my referencing a lot of things to our government. Was I being respectful or disrespectful. You see, it was an insult. And that's what Paul says, I have broken the law. You shall not speak evil of a ruler of your people. And there's a certain, when it comes to submission to government, there's also an association with the submission of being respectful towards. And while we can be frustrated with our government for not obeying their laws, the second part, I believe, of our responsibility is that we don't allow that frustration to become disrespect towards our government. Because we're going to see in Romans 13 that Jacob's already pointed out to, they have been put in charge by whom? God. And so if we are being disrespectful to our government, we are also being disrespectful to God. And so I've already admitted, I freely admit it, and I changed my attitude. This is why when we're going through situations, I recommend heavily to everybody, you restudy. When you're going through a tough situation, restudy. Because the job of a gospel preacher, according to Paul in 1 Timothy, is not to teach new things, but he says, if you will do what, you will be a good evangelist for God. Anybody remember what he says there? If you remind them of these things, if you bring to remembrance, which means they've already learned it, but they have forgotten. Not that anybody else is like me and forgets things. Kevin?
This passage here in Acts 23 with Luke 13 when Jesus said, go tell that fox to hear.
I think fox there is more in terms of the fact that he was the word fox, I don't know if it's an insult per se, but just a reference to he was pretty smart. It's kind of like being as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves. He was as wise as a serpent in many ways. And I think that's probably more so of what? Okay? Kevin, that's for me, though. That's for me. Kevin?
Tying in what you said, you know, those of us in the room, some of us have different requirements to the government than others. For me and James, if we badmouth the government or governor directly, we can go to jail under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So for as Christians, sometimes other Christians around us have different requirements that maybe it's hard to remember that, I use that example because it's very tough at the same problem we had, especially since I was at the time of COVID, we were in the other room with him, and we had to sit there and
take
yes,
you.
Sir, no, sir, yep. Yes, ma'am, no, whatever leadership was in charge, and that could be very challenging, you know, for different positions. So my point to that is all of us have, our requirements are different, although they're the same by the scripture, but how we react to them will not be the same because all of us have internal ones, if that makes any sense. Kind of like respect to your company. You work for the school system. You have to, that's the government, sort of, differently. I mean, so all of us have different ways. So it's, I think what happened with the COVID time is everybody wanted to point fingers without keeping in mind everybody's role is different and everybody's response is going to be slightly different based on their life.
And the frustration is different too, different levels. And when frustration enters in, I'm just telling you, when frustration enters in, it can cause problems if we're not careful. Jacob?
I kind of had to think along the same lines that Kevin was, because I've heard many Christians use that passage in Luke 13 over the last couple of years. You know, and it is... I mean, I've kind of wrestled with it myself just to determine what Jesus was saying. One thing I thought of in this whole discussion is, you know, Paul does make use of his rights back in chapter 16 when he realized he's talking to the high priest here in 23. Then, like you say, his attitude, his words change. But to think about the greatest example of all, Jesus. I mean, the religious leaders and even the Roman government was overstepping their bounds. Great. But he knew he was doing God's will. So, I mean, I've thought about some of these situations in the past, why sometimes Paul just took it. You know, Stephen, was beaten, stoned to death, why some took it, and why on some occasions he stood up and said, no, this isn't right. I don't have all the answers to that, but it seems like, going back again to what Brother Jim said from Acts 16, you know, for Paul, if it advanced the cause of Christ, he would be beaten, or if it advanced the cause of Christ, that he would stand up and say, no, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. He wasn't thinking about himself. It doesn't
yep.
seem.
Yep, yep, very good, very good. Anyone else? Robert and then Bruce?
Do you think there could have been some level of sarcasm involved here? I don't know all their customs and so forth, but to me, if you're dragged into the courtroom in our society, you know who the judge is. He's the guy sitting up there on the podium wearing the robe. And when you have a person that's giving commands and other people are obeying those commands, you know who's in authority. So to say, you know, that doesn't add up to me. Oh, I didn't recognize it. I think there could be a level of sarcasm by the way he was acting. I didn't know he was the high priest.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. All I know is what's said there. And what's said there is that, you know, when he found out, when it was pointed out to him, his whole attitude changed. And he tells us why. Bruce?
Going back to the frustration you were talking about, we can be angry and sin not, and we can be upset about something, frustrated about something, and sin not. In both instances, even with worrying, it can become sin to us, worrying about things. And if you're a Christian, if you're doing the things that you need to be doing, voting and
we're going to talk about voting. Yeah. Don't go there yet. We're going to talk about
that. If you're doing the things that you need to be doing, then you'll have that respect for the office. You realize that he's your president, he's your governor, he's your mayor, he's whatever. And as long as they are within the bounds of God's law, you have that respect. Now, when they go out of the bounds of God's law, you can get frustrated, but you still have to be a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. And you have to do what you can do. Praying is one of the biggest things.
We'll talk about that.
We forget about that.
Mm-hmm. And I just point out to you, as you're listening to comments, there's varying degrees and slight differences in the comments, which might indicate something to us just a little bit. So be thinking about that. Be thinking about that. Next passage, and I am moving because I do want to get to worship. I want to make sure we have some time with that. And this is another passage that probably is going to be a surprise to us and maybe a little tough, but I think we can get some lessons and relationships to our government, and also maybe a responsibility. So when Paul's nephew, heard that they're ambushed, he went and entered the barracks and told Paul. Then Paul called one of the centurions to him and said, "Take this young man to the commander, for he has something to tell him." So he took him and brought him to the commander and said, "Paul, the prisoner, called me to him and asked me to bring this young man to you. He has something to say to you." Then the commander took him by the hand and went aside and asked privately, "What is it that you have to tell me?" And he said, "The Jews have agreed to ask that you bring Paul down to the council tomorrow, as though they were going to inquire more fully about him. But do not yield to them, for more than 40 of them lie in wait for him, men who have bound themselves by an oath that they will neither eat nor drink till they have killed him. And now they are ready, waiting for the promise from you." So the commander let the young man depart and commanded him, "Tell no one that you have revealed these things to me." Sent to Felix, and he called for two centurions, saying, "Prepare 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at the third hour of the night, and provide mounts to set Paul on and bring him safely to Felix the governor." Again, another tough passage, and again, maybe one that surprising and kind of goes to terms more of our interaction than responsibilities with government. But notice, when Paul heard of the planned attack, he had his nephew go and tell the commander. And I believe Paul knew the commander's response. And I want you to understand what the response could have meant to those 40 men had they attacked, which was what? What would have happened to those 40 men if they had attacked 450 soldiers, the Roman soldiers? They're on die. I mean, that's 40 Roman soldiers against them, and they were going to die. But that many Roman soldiers, the greatest army in the world at that time, against 40 Jews, they were going to die. Do you think Paul knew that? Absolutely. So what lessons can we learn from this account? What does this say to our relationship with our government as well? Paul knew that these men could have died because of what he did. I believe that wholeheartedly. Then why do that? Nate?
I think your answer is found in verse 10 to 23. Because at this time, if you had a prisoner as a soldier under your guard, you were bound to their life to deliver them safely to their next point. And we see that demonstrated in verse 10. When the great dissension develops, the commander was afraid Paul would be torn to pieces by them and ordered the troops to go down and take him away and bring him by force to the barracks. So Paul, by telling this commander, was essentially also saving this commander's life.
Possibly. I think it's more saving Paul's life. I think he did it for a reason. And I think there's a lesson here for us. Furtherance of the gospel. We've been talking about that. He wasn't ready yet to die. He wasn't ready yet to die. He knew he still had things to do. Very good possibility. Anything else? I told you it was not an easy one. As Christians, the children of God, we don't have to accept bullying, sexual harassment, being stolen from. We are not lambs led to the slaughter, per se, of accepting wrongs to be thrust upon us. If somebody is bullying you, if somebody is sexually harassing you, you have the right to do what? Ask whom to protect you? The government. I think that's a lesson we can learn from this, brethren. If somebody is breaking the law in dealing with you, you have the right to get the government involved and stop it. And I think that's what we see here with the Apostle Paul. You don't have to take it. Now, if you're suffering as a Christian, that's a different story. But if somebody is breaking the law, and even if that means that that individual that's perpetrating the wrong will be forcefully stopped. If somebody's stealing from you, you can tell them, you can turn them into the police and say, I want them to stop. There is nothing wrong with that. And I think that's what we see here. And I think that's one of the lessons that we can learn from this. And I believe this passage is more talking about how we can use our government to guard and protect us, as that is why government has been established by our God, for the good of the people. Those 40 men, we're going to do what? Obey the law or break the law in trying to kill Paul? They were breaking the law. And they were breaking God's law. And so Paul said, go tell the commander. As Nate pointed out, it's his responsibility to protect me. And that's exactly what he did. Now, I'd be interested to know if those 40 men died of hunger and thirst, or if they went ahead and ate and drank anyway, if they kept their vow to God or if they broke it. But I believe that this is the response. But is there a responsibility? I'm not real sure. And so nothing's going to change on this one. Now something is going to change. Go over to 1 Timothy chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. See if we can get through these passages and next week get to the application and start worship. Therefore, I exhort first of all that supplications, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceful life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who desire all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. This speaks more towards our responsibilities and relationships towards our government. What responsibilities are discussed in this passage? What responsibilities are discussed in this passage? What do we have a responsibility for? To pray for the government. Now, what is it, according to this passage, that we need to be praying for? To be keeping our freedoms? That's when I read this New Testament and it says we're supposed to pray for our government, there's really only two things that we're commanded to be praying for our government for. Freedom is not something that's guaranteed to us by God. Matter of fact, under the government that Paul lived under, there was no such thing as individual freedom. Who was in charge? Caesar. It was a dictatorship. And so, you know, freedom was not something. But what was it Paul says we need to be praying for? He uses two words. What do those two words mean? Well, let me just kind of put up here both of them, the definitions. Quiet comes from a Greek word, and the highlighted, free from outward disturbances, tranquil, without needless commotion or disturbances. Interesting, it's only used one place in this passage. Is used of the tranquil lifestyle of someone who is composed, self-contained, discreet. Figuratively refers to being composed, avoiding what is flamboyant, ostentatious. So we're not leading a life that calls attention to ourselves. The word for tranquil, peaceful, means properly quiet, still, steady, settled, due to a divinely inspired inner calmness. Describes being appropriately tranquil by not misusing or overusing words that would stir up needless friction, destructive commotion. So, I'm going to leave this up here. What is it Paul is saying we need to be praying to our government for? For the yeah. Well, what is it we're supposed to be praying for the government to do for us?
Close out here the way verse 2 closes out, in all godliness and dignity. So if we're not doing it in godliness and dignity, or for it to be done in godliness and dignity, then quiet and tranquil life doesn't really come into play there, does it?
Okay. And I think the godliness and reverence there is another way of basically of saying these same things. Yes. Oh yeah, you do. Yeah. 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 Quiet and peaceful. Quiet and tranquil. What are we praying for the government to do for us? How should they be ruling? How should we be acting? Kirk?
Paul. His life would be quiet and tranquil.
With the gospel, he caused a lot of commotion because it brought about change. But in relation to the government, are we drawing attention to ourselves? Is that what that's saying? That we need to be out there protesting and drawing attention to ourselves and making a commotion? Or should we be praying that they rule in such a way that we can do our business with dignity, reverence, godliness, quietness, tranquility? How often do we pray to the government for this? Pray not to the government, pray for the government for this to take place. What is it our prayers are usually composed of when it comes to our government? See, this is the lifestyle. This is in reference to the lifestyle that we as Christians need to be living. And that's what we're praying for the government to be able to do. Rule in such a way that we can lead this kind of life as we live here in this country. Yeah.
I think you've got to get to Romans 13 eventually, but just that our government can be that kind of government. Mm-hmm. They praise those who do good in God's sight and punish those who do evil. I think here in this passage, also verses 3 and 4 relates to this, that as we live that tranquil, quiet life in godliness and dignity, by the life that we live, we can hopefully bring people to the gospel. Mm-hmm. And we can continue to, you know, as Paul prays in Colossians 4 and other places, to have open doors for the gospel. And sometimes, I mean, government has something to do with whether doors are open or closed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, We need to be praying for our government to rule in such a way that as the people of God, we can lead a quiet and peaceful life. Oh, one point I want to make. Time's almost run out for me, but I want to take a look at that last one. Describes being appropriately tranquil by not misusing or overusing words that will stir up needless friction, destructive commotion. There's so much that could be said about social media. So I just kind of point that out to you, that as Christians, that is what we should not be. We should be doing that with our words and not causing needless friction and destructive commotion. Yes? Thank you. The context. So, but that's not dealing with government, so I just wanted to sneak it in there. That was free. If you would. So, here we go. We got that down there. We need to be last responsibility. We need to be praying for our government to rule in such a way that as a people of God, we lead a quiet and peaceful life. So the first half of next week, we will finish this discussion. And we're going to deal with Romans 13. And I think when we take a look at Romans 13, we've already seen most of everything in Romans 13, believe it or not. Most everything that's taught in Romans 13, we've already covered in these other passages. It's just a culmination, really, of the other passages. And then I'm going to make some application. We're going to make some application, and then we will start our study on worship next week. So I'm hoping about half the class finishing this discussion, and then the other half will start our study on worship. Thank you for your comments this week.